This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Today, we welcome back Stacy Brown Randall to the show. Stacy was with us back on episode 240, where she shared how to get referrals without asking, which we like. She has also written several articles for the Entree Architect blog and is presented at our Entree Architect expert training sessions at the network. Stacy has helped thousands of business owners generate referrals naturally, and she's back to share insights from her new book, The Referrable Client Experience. And she hosts the Roadmap to Referrals podcast and teaches a practical, proven approach to building a steady stream of referral business without gimmicks. If you want more of the right clients coming in the right way, listen up. You're going to like this episode. Stacy Brown Randall, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark, for having me back. You know, it's funny when you talk about the episode I was on before, and then I know like the episode that we're recording in now, I'm like, that was back when we were young.
That was a long time ago. Episode 240, this is 632, I think, as long as it publishes as planned.
The 200 to the 600s. I mean, that's a lot of weekly podcast episodes, a lot of years.
It is a lot of years. You've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this a long time. I love what you do. And I know my audience and our community loves what you teach, because a lot of what architects do is referral business. Mm-hmm. And we love the way that you present referable clients. And so I'm excited about this, a referable client experience, which I love designing experiences for clients. And so I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Same.
Before we jump into that, I want to remind everybody your origin story. So when did you get started with what you do, and how did you discover your passion for what you do, and who or what inspired you to get started?
Yeah, that would be the School of Hard Knocks. I actually had a first business. It was a human resource HR consulting firm, and it failed after 4 years. It didn't quite make it to the 5-year mark. So I was part of the, 85% of business owners that do not make it to the 5th year in business. I am definitely one of them. member of that business failure club. And when I started my second business, which would evolve into this business that I have today, which now is 12 years old at the time that we're doing this recording. And so when I think about like that business failure, having to go back to corporate America and then starting a second business, it was everything that I was attempting to learn and understand of like what went wrong with my first business, what massive role that I play in it not being as successful as it should have been. And then being open to learning things differently in terms of, for me, it was wanting to grow. At the time, my second business started out as a productivity and business coaching practice. And I wanted to not fail again. I wanted a business that could be successful, that could stand the test of time. And so for me, I knew that generating clients the easiest way possible was referrals. But all the advice out there is that you've got to ask your clients, you've got to ask other centers of influence, other people, other contacts to refer you, or you have to be like really gimmicky and put in your email signature, the greatest compliment you can give us is a referral, or you got to network all the time. And I'm, you know, a wife of three kids, like I don't have time for all that networking. And so I was looking for just a better way to do referrals and doing it in a way that would feel right, but also work, because it doesn't really matter if it feels great, if it's actually not successful. And so it was throwing a lot of spaghetti on the wall. I'm like, let's see what works. Let's see what fits. And in my first year in business, it was 112 referrals that I didn't ask for. And I was like, huh, I think I'm probably onto something here. And my coaching clients were like, they would tell me, they'd be like, we love you teaching us how to like time block and control our inbox and manage that the beast that is the inbox, but we'd rather learn how you're growing so fast. And I was like, oh, it's through referrals. And that forces you, when you have to teach it to somebody else, it kind of forces you to reverse engineer what exactly am I doing and what exactly is working. And I had noticed some clues along the way, and I was starting to do some things in a repeatable way. And I was like, wait, this is working. And I'm getting referrals. I'm getting people to refer other people to me, and I'm not having to ask for it or compensate for it. And that kind of changed the trajectory of my entire business. And I just started teaching people what I was doing, teaching my clients. And then, you know, the business evolved over time and the strategies have grown over time, depending on what someone was trying to do in their business. Like some people need new people referring them. Some people have people referring them, but they need more from them. Some people just have a quality issue. Some people have a closing. Like referrals aren't a nail and the only tool or solution you need is a hammer. You need a fully stocked toolbox. And when you look at all the things that go into referrals and what makes up referrals and how they happen and what happens when they arrive in your business and how we handle those and treat those. And there's so many nuances to that. And there's a lot of, you know, individual like strategies or tactics. And so I started building out a body of work that I teach my clients like, hey, and right now it's 20 strategies. I'm like, this is how we think about referrals. And nobody needs all 20. I don't even use all 20 in my business. But anytime I've taught one to a client, I make it available to the rest of my clients. And that's how my body of work has grown and this methodology and the framework that I teach from.
400 episodes since we last talked. Like, as we mentioned, it's been a long time. You know, how to get referrals without asking is what we were talking about last time. What's changed in those 400 weeks since that episode in terms of, you know, what you do and what you're teaching?
Yeah. So I would say the bigger things that have changed, it's not referrals. They haven't changed, right? Referrals are evergreen. They're always going to be around. I think what I have gotten better at, definitely like how my business is structured, that's been a big transition that I did about 4 years ago. So that's changed in terms of like how I work with clients and how I deliver what I teach. But the other thing that's changed is I think it's been my ability to learn different ways to teach it in ways that different people can understand it and hear it. Because the truth is what we talked about in that first episode, if I were to go back and listen to that, I'd be like, yep, I still say the same things today. 4 years later, 5 years later, I still say that. And I said the same things 5 years before that episode, because the what I teach around referrals without asking, that's the baseline of understanding the science behind referrals and understanding where referrals come from. And you know, really looking at referrals from that perspective of what you can control and not control. And all that stuff remains the same. But I definitely back then, I would say probably talked about the book was based on one of those 20 strategies. This next book, The Referrable Client Experience, my new book, is based on another one of those 20 strategies. So there is like, we're still just scratching the surface, I think, in terms of like the resources that I put out and the books and stuff that I put out in terms of what I teach. So I would say the depth has definitely evolved how I teach it in different frameworks. Like I hear past podcast episodes and I'm like, oh, I used to teach that like it's layers and now I teach it like it's an ecosystem. So some of that's changed, but the crux of it hasn't. It's withstood the test of time because referrals are evergreen.
So the new book is Referrable Client Experience. How do you define that? What does that mean?
Yeah. So most people talk about the client experience and they're like, okay, it's like what the client goes through. But the true definition of a client experience, in my opinion, it's actually how your client feels when they're working with you and then those feelings that they carry with them when they're done working with you. And then I break down the client experience into stages. Like there's three stages. Most architects are going to have these three stages. Not all businesses have all three, but an architect would. And so it's understanding that the client experience isn't just the work you do. It's how you also maintain a relationship and strengthen a relationship with your clients. And it's at the end of the day, it's how your clients feel working with you. And I think people overlook how much the feelings drive everything else that the client says, does, and actions that they'll take, like referring.
And in order to get the right feelings, I'm assuming that needs to be a very intentional thing.
Yes. You have a client experience.
Right.
Every business has a client experience. It's just whether or not it's intentional or unintentional.
And referable, right? And it could also backfire, right? That if the experience is not a great experience, they may be talking about you in a negative way.
Yes. There's a lot of like pros and cons, I would say, in terms of like the things you want to pay attention to within your client experience. It's the ability for you to make sure that you're paying attention to how your client feels while you're also delivering on that great work. But it's funny because you can do a great job for us, right? Like if you think about any of your clients, you're like, wow, like that was the most amazing thing we've ever done. But everything about the experience was a mess.
Right.
Even if the client's like, I love my home or I love this building that you designed. I love everything about it. But they may not still feel amazing about you when it's all said and done because of what they experienced as they went through it. And I think people overlook that. I think people leave the feelings a client has up to chance. Now, you can't make every client happy. And some clients, let's be honest, are just going to be difficult. Doesn't matter what you do or what your experience looks like. But it's that idea of being really intentional about how you know and understand about, okay, my client, not only are they thinking rationally through this entire process, they're also thinking emotionally through this entire process and really being able to speak to both. But we're all like small business owners. So we got to put it into a process that can be repeatable so that it can be done consistently, no matter how many clients we're working with at any one given time.
I wonder how architects compare to other business owners that you talk to. Architects have projects that are long-term, high trust, high investment. Are there challenges or advantages that architects have by having that long enduring relationship?
Yeah. So the number one advantage they have can also be the number one challenge. And that is the time, right? So the time they get to spend with their clients allows them to really build those deep, long-standing relationships that can serve them well, that can make them referable and then help them bridge the gap to receiving referrals. But the time aspect is also a challenge that if they're not aware of it and not paying attention to it, that can be the one thing that negatively impacts that experience. So one of my clients as an architect actually came from you when they heard me give one of the webinars that I did for your learning series. Jackie, we talk about her in the book. The one thing I always learned with her, because she is an architect in San Francisco and, the permitting process can last years, not just like months in some cities, it's going to last years. And so, within architects, I see this a lot also with interior designers and some other industries. It's like what are you doing during the waiting game? Like, and it's not just the communicating that there's nothing to communicate. It's more than that. It's like, how do you handle? What are you doing? How are you showing up when they're in that waiting period? Because it's in that middle stage of your client experience that we call the active stage, where most of the work is getting done. So the new stage is like that short first stage that you have. It's pretty short. You move into the active stage and then they're in the active stage until they're done. And then they move to the alumni stage. But the idea in that active stage is that's where, as business owners, who have multiple clients going through client experiences of their own, right? That we get lulled into complacency. And every business deals with that, right? I mean, I have to pay attention to it when people are in my coaching program and it's 12 months, right? Like we have to be aware of like, to us, it's like, it's, oh, it's so many months, right? But it's noticing and paying attention to the lulls that happen and that complacency that can happen. And so knowing how to show up in those moments and what that looks like and managing all the many, many to-dos that go into that process, that's definitely one thing that I think architects have to kind of pay attention to. It's their strength, but it can also be their challenge if they're not being intentional about when your client sits and waits, what are you doing? How are you showing up? How are you managing those emotions?
Yeah, that's important. Can you map out a client's journey for us, looking at an architect's overall experience with a client and help us understand where those referable moments might be within that process?
Yeah, so we call those referral hot zones, and they're a little bit different for every business. There's some standard ones that we see amongst most companies, regardless of industry. So the way that we break down the client experience is three stages. It's new, active, and alumni. I know some people call their previous or past clients, they call them previous or past. We call them alumni because, not because your clients need to know they're an alumni client, but because I want you to think about them differently. I want you to think about them. And when you call them alumni clients, it just puts a different label on them, because the client experience, the work part of the client experience may end when the work is over, but not the relationship. So the formula of how we look at the client experience and that new, active, and alumni stage is that there's the work you do, and it is, add to it, the relationship that you're providing to your client. So it's the work touch points along with the relationship building touch points, and you need both. And they extend from the new, active, to alumni stage. Now, in the alumni stage, it's only relationship building touch points because you're done with the actual work that you're doing. What I find with people as they kind of go through the process of mapping out their client experience is that what they're really good at is saying, okay, here are all the work things that I do. Here's all the work touch points. Here's the checklist that we follow. Here's what this looks like. And you kind of do it the same way for every client. And I always say it's going in and putting yourself in that position of when you determine what is the work touch points that are happening during that new client stage. The second question to ask yourself is, okay, this is what we're doing. What is our client experiencing? And in the new client stage, it's kind of the same for everybody, regardless of industry. And that is, it's what I call the quiet voice. There's all these things running through your client's head that they are worried about, that they are concerned about, that they've got questions about, but they're not speaking to you about. And so it's kind of like they're really excited that they're starting this project, but they also just probably sunk a ton of money into it as well, or they will continue, right? And not just to you, right? Like they got it. It's not just the architect, then it becomes the contractor. And then, right. And then if there's an interior designer, and then there's like all the things, and there's like the furnishings, it's like all the things, it's like massive endeavor for them. And that's whether it's commercial or residential, it doesn't matter. And so when you think through, when they're in that new stage and they have that quiet voice, it's the quiet voice of buyer's remorse, right? They can still be excited and be nervous at the same time. And so it's like, what do you do that's not work related, that is more relationship related, that speaks to that quiet voice, that shows up to your clients in a way they didn't see coming, right? And then one example for that is it, for most folks, and the most cost effective thing for folks to do is to send a welcome card, right? But what I find is that people send a card and it's like, thanks for being a client. We're so glad to work with you, which right. There's nothing... Fundamentally, there's nothing wrong with that. I'd rather you send that than nothing at all. But that's actually about you. Thanks for being my client. I'm excited to make money off of you. I mean, clearly, and we're not saying that in the card.
Yeah, exactly.
But what if you wrote a card that spoke to the quiet voice? What if you wrote a card that spoke to the potential buyer's remorse? And what if you spoke to their unspoken concerns? So that card would be something more specifically around like, we are very excited to work with you. We know this process is going to take time, right? We know that this will be a long journey and you're not on this journey alone. We're your co-pilot. We've done this before, right? We're coming alongside you and we've got you every step of the way. It's that ability to speak to what they're not saying that puts their mind at ease, that starts seeding that idea of, okay, I feel held. I feel like this person knows what's happening and I feel good about this, and kind of maintains that emotion that you want. Because if you don't maintain the emotions of someone feeling like this is going to be good, even if things go not according to plan, I'm in good hands, because you'll never bridge the gap to referrals if you can't first master being referable. And that comes down to exactly how people feel. So in that new stage, it's like, it's as simple as the note that you write, but changing the language. Most of the things I teach my clients lines within the client experience. It's not rocket science. It's not like we're pulling something like a rabbit out of a hat, something you've never thought of to do before, but we are being intentional about things that we do so we have opportunities to be able to bridge the gap to referrals. But so when they're new, it's not about, hey, okay, what exactly can I do to get referrals here? That is about what can I do to show up differently so that I'm setting the foundation for future referrals.
Right. Right.
Then as they move from new to active, and every architect gets to pick at what point in the timeline that clicks over, right? There's not a, it happens at 30 days for everybody. It's not that type of way. It looks different for everyone. So when they're done being new and you kind of feel it, you've moved into the, now we're doing the work, right? Then you have to pay attention to what are your hot zones within that active stage. And of course, as most people can imagine, the ending of the active stage moving into alumni has the potential to generate referrals as well. And so it's paying attention to those moments. We call them hot zones. I think it's better for businesses to map out their own by looking at past data of when clients in the client experience have referred, if they've referred. But just knowing when those moments are and like putting in very specific things that really makes a client feel like you care and they're more than a number and you recognize what they're going through, that lays the best foundation to be able to bridge the gap to referrals.
Are there specific moments that are typical in a business relationship that clients are more likely to be acceptable to that referable moment?
So every client's going to be a little bit different, right? Some people I refer to as the right people. They show up, they decide to hire you, and then they tell everybody.
Yeah.
You can't identify those folks. They don't walk around with a sign on that says, I am great at giving referrals the minute I give you a bunch of money, right? Like nobody like walks around like that. So sometimes you have the right people. And so you have to pay attention to that. So I tell my clients to look at this in three ways. One is sometimes it's just the right person. The right person showed up. You didn't do anything specific maybe to actually generate referrals, but you got referrals from them because they're the right person. The second thing you're paying attention to are those hot zones. Like where is the thing where their anticipation is higher or their happiness is higher that sometimes there's more likely for folks to refer? So, you know, when it's all said and done, right? Or maybe when the first time they see the plans, right? So there's these moments you want to pay attention to where there is just that, what we would kind of call that hot zone. And then the last one is just what we call referral moments. It's when things are spoken. When a client says certain things, right? Sometimes that's the opportunity for you to plant referral seeds. So with the right people, with hot zones, and with just the referral moments, we have to pay attention to the what do we say and what do we do
right
throughout those to be able to generate referrals. And sometimes it's the power of suggestion, right? With the language it is. Sometimes we use different types of language like indirect referral seed language because with our clients, right? We never want to ask. We never want to offer to compensate. And we never want to sound gimmicky or promotional. So we walk a line of getting the language right. That's why I think that language piece, it's like my secret sauce that I teach my clients. Getting that right matters so much. And that makes it like based on who you are matters because you have to be comfortable delivering it as well. So it's like looking at those moments and then knowing what to do, whether it's the right people, the hot zones, or those referral moments when a client just says, this was amazing, right? And I have like three people I need to tell. Like, I want you to know, like, this is what you say in that moment when they say that. So sometimes it's just what they say. Other times it's what they're experiencing. And other times they're just the right people. But you got to have a process in place for all three of them.
So you have to anticipate that those moments will happen, plan for them, script them, whatever you need to do. So you have the right words at the right time. So when that client comes to you and says, I love what you did here, and I want to talk to my friends about this. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at arcat.com under the resources tab, or just go to arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. What would you say at that moment? If you're not going to say, well, can you do that? So, you know, so we can get that referral. How do you plant the seed, as you said?
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do and have my clients do is to turn that deep desire you have to be like, well, can you just tell me who they are?
Yeah.
Right? Can you just refer them to me? Is to take it from making it about you to making it to being helpful. And the easiest way to do that is turn that into the, oh yeah, well, as you're showing off what we've done together, right? As you're talking to your friends about what we've done together, let's be honest, this process is complicated and long. They're probably going to have questions. If it's easier for you, you can just connect me with them and I will be happy to answer those questions so you don't have to, right? And so it's not like I'll be happy to answer their questions and then pounce on them and sell to them and make them want to hire me, right? Like,
right.
That's not what you're going to do either. But it's just taking a very simple, like, I'm talking to folks about this, be like, the easiest way to make that more conversational and more normal and more like you're trying to help versus that you're trying to extract them to like give you potential clients is to be helpful and just be like, great, I'm happy to answer questions.
Become a resource.
Yeah, just I'm happy. And that's what people want to know is if I do connect people to you, what are you going to do with it? And if you're already saying up front before they have to ask the question and you're just like, yeah, I can just answer their questions. Like we can just hop on a call for 10, 15 minutes and they can ask any questions they have. I can walk them through it. When that happens, and it won't always happen. Every time you say it wasn't necessarily is always going to produce referrals.
Yeah.
But when you do say it and it does happen, how you then handle that conversation is key to that client sending more to you because it's all going to be based on what that person says when they go back to their friend who was your client who just referred them.
Yeah. And as we talk about a lot on this podcast is making your client the hero, right? That when those moments are there, become the resource, become the guide for them to be the hero for their friend. Being helpful is a way, great way to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Are there opportunities to expand those referable moments and the experience beyond the client? Are there opportunities with contractors and consultants and those kind of things as well that we should be planning and designing?
Yeah. So we look at those separately than the client experience. So if I think about the 20 strategies that I teach to my clients, there are three big ones. And these are the three foundational ones. And these are the three that I think every business should have in place. If you do nothing else, these are the three you should have in place. Now, in reality, not everybody has to have all three. It really depends on where you're starting from. But the first one is if you have people referring you now, you need a plan in place of how you take care of them to generate more referrals from them. And that was what my first book was actually written about and based on. And then we're now in the, with the second book, it's like, okay, now we need to make sure we have the client experience that is in place that we're not only being referable, but we know how to bridge the gap to generate referrals from our clients. The third foundational strategy is new people that you want referring you. And so a lot, when we look at new people referring you, for most folks, that's their centers of influence. Right? That's the ability for them to take that contractor, that interior designer, the whoever else comes across their clients and swims upstream from them that they would want to get referrals from is identifying those folks and building relationships with those folks. But how you cultivate somebody who's never thought to refer you and may quite frankly be referring another architect over you right now, right? Just because that's who they know. To think through that process and to cultivate a relationship with someone who's never thought to refer you and bring them to a place over time where they will refer you, that's an entirely different strategy than something you're going to do for people who refer you now and for clients to refer you. So you have to think about that differently. It's kind of like a separate standalone plan and strategy within your business.
What about materials and resources that we create is, and this may be also a separate strategy, but are there opportunities for us to be prepared not only with the right words, but some sort of right material or right resources that we can, you know, provide them that gives them the opportunity to share additional knowledge and additional referrals?
So that's like a big misnomer.
Okay.
And when it comes to referrals, is this idea that I need to make sure that my clients or whoever's referring me is armed with the what I do and how I do it and how I'm different.
Yeah. Okay.
Because we feel like, well, you got to know that I'm good to actually be able to refer. And the truth is, for someone to refer to you, ultimately what they need is to trust you. They need to know what you do, right? Like, they need to know you're an architect. They don't need to actually think, you know, that you're the contractor, right? Like, they need to be clear on the what you do. But when they think about referring you, they're going to refer the people that they trust. The people that they trust, what we want to believe is it's because of all of the awards we won or all the accolades we've had. And there is a piece to that. Like, doing great work matters. Yep. Your reputation matters, right? But how someone thinks to refer you over somebody else has more to do about the relationship they have with you versus how many awards that you've won or your portfolio that you can show off that you've done. And I know that's really, really hard for people to wrap their heads around. So a common thing for people to be like is like, when people are like, oh, I'm going to talk to my friend, they're like, oh, let me give you my business cards, or let me give you these brochures, or let me send you this link.
Right.
I always tell folks, don't offer it unless they ask for it, because they don't need it to refer you. And if the minute you say, well, let me give you some business cards, or let me give you some brochures, or let me make sure that you have my link to send out, or here's the blurb that you can send out, now you've just commoditized that into a sales conversation.
Exactly. You've ruined the moment.
You've ruined the moment, and you've made it work for them, because now they're like, oh God, I got to get it right to be able to do it. And the minute you make a referral source, client or center of influence, the minute you make them feel like they could do it wrong, they're like, it was work anyways. It's not benefiting me necessarily.
Right.
So I don't need to, like, then they'll back away. So it's one of those things, is I know people want to be like, you got to know how good I am to be confident in referring to me. I always tell folks, trust that they believe that you are, unless you prove them wrong.
Yeah.
Trust that they believe that you're amazing, and just move forward with deepening the relationship so they can actually keep you top of mind. And when the opportunity is there, you've locked in the desire to refer to you.
Yeah, that's important. Thank you for that. What about measuring this or getting feedback? Are there metrics to this process?
Oh yeah. So, you know, we're really big when I work with my clients, I'm like, if we don't track it, it's like it doesn't exist. And that's not fair for the work we're going to put in. So tracking what happens is really important. There's something I teach in the book, in the third part of the book, kind of figuring out where your hot zones are, is actually a process that I teach people to go through. And you can do it, we call it like the starter step or the master step or the as you go step. And it's really, you just pick one. It's whatever one intimidates you the least, is what I tell folks to, like, pick. But it's that idea of really paying attention to, when are referrals, are referrals happening from your clients? And when are they happening? And when in that client's journey, that client's experience journey, are they providing those referrals? And understanding that, because that helps us build out the what we're going to do to nurture more referrals from those moments and recognizing those hot zones. So that's really, really important. But then the metrics you actually want to be tracking is not only when you receive referrals, right, and who they come from, but also what was, like, the outcome of it? Did you close them into a client? Were they not the right fit? Did you have to refer them to someone else? And then, of course, what was, like, so now we know the outcome, right? We also want to know the revenue, right? So that way we can actually, like, look at this from an ROI perspective in terms of closing that client.
I love that. Yeah.
And I think that's really important. So I always tell folks, like, when you're tracking incoming leads to your business or incoming prospects to your business, there's five things you should be tracking: the date they show up, their name. I mean, obviously track their email address and things like that, but let's keep it high level. The date the prospect shows up, the prospect's name, where the prospect came from. And if they were referred, I want it to say the referral source's name, whether that's a center of influence or a client, right? And then I want it to be like, okay, great, what was the outcome? And then what's the estimated or eventually the finalized revenue? Because when I see data like that, I can instantly look at not only what's your closing ratio of referrals in your business as it relates to other methods of how you're bringing in clients, we can also figure out, like, what's working and what's not in terms of lead generation in your business. But I can also identify closing issues. I can identify quality issues, and I can identify who are your better referral sources, because you're getting better quality and you're more likely to close them over other referral sources where you may not. So I worked with an architect, and that was a big thing for them, was realizing that they had one real estate agent that referred them all the time. And if you had asked them based on just their memory or, like, recency bias, like, who's your top referral source, they would have said this one real estate agent, but in reality, never closed anything.
Yeah. Interesting.
Right. So it's like, oh, like, why would you put time and energy into that one realtor when you're not ever closing anything because they don't understand what you do. They can't set you up correctly. And quite frankly, they aren't playing in the same playground as you. They're not playing in the same area as you. They're not coming across the type of clients that your firm serves. And so it was eye-opening for people to realize, like, you know, people sometimes say, if I have enough activity and I feel busy enough, I can feel good enough that things are happening. And I'm always like, I was talking with a company the other day, it's in my coaching program. And I'm like, you're doing so many things that you think are generating referrals. You're afraid to stop any of them because you have no idea which one's actually working. And are they working as well as we want them to? We don't know because you're doing too much. So it's also understanding like what's working and what's not. And then being really, really conscious of like where you start implementing new strategies and new tactics.
Yeah, it's super interesting. As you were talking about that, the process of identifying your ideal client came to mind because we teach that in our Build Your Brand course, talking about identifying your ideal client. We don't teach doing these metrics for referrals and adding those referral metrics to your ideal client, because not only is it you're looking for the ideal client that brings you the most money and has the best experience and the best projects, but also if you layer in, you know, who's giving you the most referrals, who is that type of person? Can you get more of those people that are your ideal client and provide additional referrals to you? You create this, you know, ongoing loop, this engine that serves itself, right? You get a client, that client refers you to the next client, and, you know, it just keeps going. Love that.
It really extends the lifetime value of a client. You know, most people look at the lifetime value of someone and it's like the lifetime value of a client in the beginning is like what I make on them when they're a client. I'm like, yes, but it can also come into like what you make on them. If they ever do a testimonial or serve as a recommendation for you, there's additional lifetime value to them. And if they ever refer you to anyone else, that's even more lifetime value.
Right. So now you have to add that project to their lifetime value because you got it through them.
Yep. And so it's just looking at people a little bit differently. I mean, it takes time and energy to do this, but it's the easiest way to bring in clients. So it's definitely a strategy that businesses should have in place.
When you're tracking those metrics, is that just a simple spreadsheet or are there tools that you recommend?
So I'm software agnostic because I work across a couple of different industries. I always tell folks that I don't care what software you use. I don't care if you use an Excel spreadsheet or a Google Doc. It doesn't matter to me. You just have to track it. And a lot of times when I work with clients that do have their own software or they're using some type of CRM, usually I will, if we're working together, I'll like look over their shoulder at the software and I'll be like, can we pull the report that we need to report based on the information you're capturing? Or they'll screen share it to me over Zoom. And I'll be like, okay, can we see what we need to see here? Can we pull what we need to pull? And usually what I find in most softwares that you're using, whether they are industry specific or you're using like a behemoth like Salesforce, right? When it looks like how you're managing your client data and your prospect data, the number one thing I find that's usually missing is the ability to customize what the source is. So a lot of times the software will give you like a dropdown, a Google ad, word of mouth, referral, SEO, presentation, open house, whatever they are, right? Yeah. Like they'll give you a dropdown, they'll kind of force you into a dropdown. And I don't mind the dropdown if you can pick referral, but then I need another field that you then can type in the referral source's name. And that is usually, that's the number one piece I'm mostly having my clients go back and add so that in their intake process, it's not just the prospect's name and address and phone number and email, right? And it's not just where they heard about us, it's the detail of how they heard about us. And if it's referred, I need you to be able to capture the name of the referral source.
Yeah. Before we wrap up with our final question, is there anything else that we need to share with our audience that we may have not talked about?
Well, there's so much.
Well, there's an entire book.
There's an entire book. But yes. So, I mean, there's a lot that I would share. I feel like we did a really good job of like making sure we talked about it more than just like the definitions and the what to know and then understanding the why behind it, which I think is really important too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the book is called Referrable Client Experience, The Referrable Client Experience. You can go to referrableclientexperience.com to check out the book and to buy it and learn all about it. Final question. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
If they would just carve out some time to map out on a piece of paper, it doesn't need to be fancy, what they are doing now within their client experience. The minute a client says yes to you, that's the moment the client experience starts. The minute they say yes, what happens? And then what happens next? And then what happens next? And then what happens next? Right.
Yep.
Like walking through that entire process and just knowing what do we do when we have a client and mapping out what your current client experience looks like, that is so very helpful to identifying in black and white pretty quickly if you have any relationship touch point gaps or if you have any communication or expectation setting gaps within the work touch points that you do as well. And paying attention to the time between those touch points and making sure that you're conscious of those. And if you need to add something to make it better, that's probably the easiest first thing folks can do. Is like start with what you have and then build from there. We talk about it in the book. It's an entire process of a chapter that I walk people through how to do it. It's also in the workbook that you can get that goes along with the book that walks you through, hey, map this out of what your current client experience looks like, because everything else is just theory that you're hearing us talk about until you really know where would I put something like this.
Yeah. I love talking to you. I always learn so much whenever we have a conversation. I love that you came by here today. Stacy Brown Randall is her name. StacyBrownRandall.com is her website. You can learn more about what she does there. The book, again, is The Referable Client Experience, ReferableClientExperience.com. We will have links to all of that on the show notes. Stacy, thank you for doing what you do. It's an important piece of business, and it's something that architects often recognize as a really important piece of their business, but struggle on how to do it. And you always teach it in such an easy, understandable way. So thank you for that. And thanks for coming by here today at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me back.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, two a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember three words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.